Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Two Malaysian trust schools have been shortlisted in the global top 10 finalists for the world's best school prize. Sekolah Kebangsaan Kempadang in Kuantan was named in the shortlist for World's Best School Prize for Innovation, while SMK Kampung Jawa in Klang was shortlisted in the Overcoming Adversity category. So joining us on the show today to tell us more about how these trust schools and the trust school model have allowed them the space to get creative with solutions, we have Nina Atlandisni. She is the Executive Director of Leap Ed Services, which is an educational social enterprise which designs and implements the Trust Schools program. Nina, welcome to the show. Can we begin our conversation today with this wonderful news that out of thousands of schools that applied from around the world, we have two Malaysian trust schools named in the top 10 shortlist for the world's best school prize. I'm going to start with a big question. Forgive me for that. But maybe you can tell us why these schools have caught the attention of, you know, this the judges of this global competition, and why a trust school, why being a trust school has enabled them to do that.
Okay, hi Melissa. Yeah, so to start off with, thank you so much for inviting me onto the segment. We are, of course, absolutely thrilled with an announcement that these two schools, and most people will have never have heard of these schools, and even if they have heard of the schools, it may be from a negative point of view. So, for example, one of the schools, SMK Kampung Jawa, has always been well known for all the kind of social issues and problems. It's an urban school serving a predominantly B40 community. So there are, you know, the usual problems involving absenteeism, involving crime, right? So even though people may have heard of that school, it might not be in such a good light. So we're absolutely thrilled that through the Trust School program, they have been able to showcase how they can turn the school around. Yeah, from being known as a quote unquote gangster school to a school which has improved its academic results by 20% and also been given the highest attendance during the pandemic for online learning. And you know how hard it is to get students engaged through online learning, but they did it. So what's the secret sauce? What is it that made these schools, and SK Kempadang as well, I'll talk a little bit more about that school later. It's not even so much the solution per se, Melissa, but as you say, what were the conditions that allowed these schools to come up with their own solutions? And what we would say would be the Trust School program creates and encourages a culture of change. It encourages a safe space where teachers, middle leaders, everyone can work together to come up with their own solution. So in a sense, yes, you can look at the software that the school in Kuantan has developed. You can look at the steps that SMK Kampung Jawa did to encourage their students to attend online learning. But in a sense, that's kind of secondary. What is the primary achievement is the fact that these schools were given that autonomy. They were empowered to find solutions to very real problems.
Can I ask you about specifically SMK's Kampung Jawa? I mean, it's remarkable that you said they've made this transformation. How long have they been a trust school?
Oh, they joined the program in 2015, Melissa. So the Trust School program is a long-term program. It ranges from 3 to 5 years. But even once the program is finished, meaning that our intervention has stopped, it still remains a trust school. We hope that the practices that we and the culture that we have encouraged will continue. And that's, you know, that's a cornerstone of the program, obviously, that it has to be sustainable and it has to be scalable. There's no point if you do great things in a period of 3 years and then it all fizzles out.
Okay, so once a trust school, always a trust school. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about trust schools itself. I'm just wondering, when we say trust school, do you think that generally the public understands what a trust school is, what the trust school program is?
We have a very low profile, so it is fantastic that, you know, we have the opportunity to explain what the Trust School program is all about. And to a certain extent, that was deliberate because we were focused on the work rather than banging our drum and, you know, saying how great Trust Schools were. We wanted the results of our work to speak for themselves, for example, now. So the Trust School program has been going for the past 11 years, Melissa. We have seen 94 schools that are part of the Trust School network. And so, yes, I don't think it is something that the general public or even within certain sectors of the Ministry of Education, even they might not be aware of what the Trust School program is all about.
Okay, so fascinating that you talked about the conditions of being a trust school that have allowed for these two amazing schools to innovate, to address the challenges that they are faced with. You talked about a culture of change, Nina, and that they were able to embrace that. Can I ask you specifically to describe what that means? What does it mean that a school has a culture of change?
Okay, a culture of change, for example, is one where they accept what their strengths and what their areas of improvement are, right? That has got to be the starting point for change. You've got to know where your strengths and weaknesses are. You've got to be authentic, yes? You can't sweep things under the carpet. We have to create a culture where it is okay not to be okay, right? You can't force every school to meet certain KPIs. It has to be customized. So that's the first step in the culture of change, Melissa, is accepting what your conditions are. And we have 10,000 schools and there are 10,000 different contexts and 10,000 types of challenges. Yeah, of course, there are similarities, but we can't have this cookie cutter, one size fits all, arahan that comes from the top and that's imposed on every school, right? There has to be some empowerment for schools to create and innovate their own solutions, as we said earlier, just like SK Kempadang did with the software. This was not a multi-million dollar software that came from some, you know, big giant tech company. This came from a kampung school, right, by a very innovative head teacher, Guru Besar. With his team, we have what we call a middle leader who took this on and really got the whole school on side and got the buy-in and explain. And that's what you need in order for real change to happen. It can't be just a arahan. It can't just be a policy that's just imposed without getting that buy-in.
I'm trying to understand, Nina. Okay, so over 11 years, is it 94 government schools that are trust schools? So help me understand how that works. You know, how do you identify which school becomes a trust school? And then what happens, where does Leap Ed Services come into play trying to get them to be a trust school?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so overarching structure is that it's a public-private partnership, a PPP between the Ministry of Education that allows us the access to the school, and a foundation called Yayasan Amir, which is established under the auspices of Khazana National Berhad. So these two parties are the custodians, if you like, of the program. LEAPED's role is as the implementer. So we design, we develop, we deliver the Trust School program throughout the 94 schools in the country. How they're selected? Well, they're selected primarily through sponsors. So the program is 100% funded by private corporate sponsors, not by the ministry, right? The ministry's role is just to give us the access. They allow us into the schools and they are partners in terms of, you know, making sure that the program runs as intended. But the funding for the program comes from sponsors. So it's really up to sponsors, Melissa, to decide where they want to impact. So, for example, one of our sponsors is Petronas, and Petronas obviously wants to impact areas where they have an operation, so in Terengganu and in Sabah, right? We also have trust schools in the Port Klang area. So that one is being sponsored by Westports, right? Because they are the corporate sponsor. We have many other sponsors like TNB, Yayasan Pahang. So the school in Kempadang, SK Kempadang, is sponsored by Yayasan Pahang because that's part of their initiative to improve education quality and student outcomes in their state. So that's how the selection goes. We try to keep it as diverse as possible. So we have a whole swathe of trust schools covering rural, urban, orang asli, Chinese, Tamil, high-performing schools. So really a trust school, our central premise is that any school can be enhanced. But we have to take the school as we find it and customize solutions based on the needs of that specific school.
And when you go into a trust school, Nina, is there resistance to, you know, changing the way things have been done for decades? Do you find resistance coming from certain quarters?
For sure there is. That's one of the key issues that we have to overcome in the early days, because there will be schools that think, well, you know, why do I need help? Who are you to come and tell me what to do? But let me get this straight. We never tell schools to do anything, right? It's not a question of imposing something on them. It is working with them to achieve achieve what they feel that they need to achieve. So we guide them, we coach them. So it's not a program that's imposed on them. But for sure, there are some schools, some senior leaders, some teachers who think, well, this is just going to membebankan cikgu, right? They see this as something that's going to add to their workload. But no, what we actually do is try to help them to find ways to reduce their workload. And we're not imposing additional processes. Wherever possible, we use the existing processes and help them to use it in a more effective and in a more authentic way.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue this conversation on Consider This. We will be right back after these messages. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our conversation with Nina Adlan-Disney. She's the Executive Director of Leap Ed Services, which designs, develops and delivers the Trust School program in Malaysia. This following wonderful news that two Malaysian Trust Schools have been shortlisted in the global top 10 finalists for the world's Best School Prize. Nina, we were talking about how this is a public-private partnership, and you talked about funding, or you talked about corporate sponsorship as a way to advance to implement the changes needed to be a trust school. Can I ask you about the role of the private sector and the consequences of having the private sector in our education system? You said that this program is scalable, but if we're depending on funding from the corporate sector, how might it be scalable, given that over 11 years, there's only been, you know, less than 100 schools, less than 100 trust schools?
Yeah, absolutely. And this 94 represents less than 1% of the total 10,000 schools we have in the country. So while the 94 trust schools have achieved amazing things, they are there really as a demonstration model, Melissa. And that was the rationale right from the start when the program was launched. And I think over the past 10, 11 years, it's been tried and it's been tested and the proof is in the pudding. So yes, clearly in the long run, it isn't something that we can expect the corporate sector to sponsor forever. Having said that, I think, you know, there is still room for more trust schools within the landscape. As I said, at the moment, it's only less than 1%. I think if you look in the blueprint, the Malaysian Education Blueprint, it was specifically mentioned that the aim was to have 500. And 500, I think, would be a good number in order for these trust schools to cascade, to become like the hub and the spoke, so that they can impact schools in their surrounding areas.
That's 500 trust schools by what year, Nina?
Well, yeah, the education blueprint is 2013 to 2025. So, yeah, so we're coming up to the end of that period. So, but then having said that, a lot of things in the blueprint, you know, are still, it's a fantastic document. Yeah, a fantastic policy document. But a lot of those policy statements and have not really been able to be implemented. So I think that's the key thing in Malaysia. We're very good at coming up with policies, but when it comes to the implementation, things kind of...
Well, I 100% agree with you. We are not short of great ideas. There are so many blueprints, policy documents, strategies, strategic plans, all outlining the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So what is it, Nina? What is holding us back from achieving some of these really necessary educational reforms?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it, for example, take the trust school program, which is tried and tested. So as I said, you know, the corporate sector can only do so much, right? Even if you get 500 schools, there's still a 10,000, you know, another 9,500. So ideally, in an ideal world, it should be something that the ministry takes on themselves, yeah, and implements and to take, you know, what has worked. But this is a problem when you have a very politically driven system. Because obviously any new leader, any new politician that comes in wants to put his or her own stamp, right? They're very loath to take on what they consider to be someone else's idea or someone else's program. They always want to do something new. So this is one of the problems inherent in our education system, hence the flip-flopping as well, right? There are two reasons for flip-flopping. One, because of political priorities that change because of different leaders. The second reason is what I said earlier about the conditions. A lot of the times, policies are announced, but without the proper buy-in, without the proper thought given to implementation. So, for example, PT3 is a great example.
Yes, I was just thinking of that.
You make this kind of announcement out of the blue. You take everyone by surprise, including your key stakeholders, i.e. parents, students, teachers. And then you just expect people to get on with it. No, you don't have the conditions. You don't have the buy-in. And then when it kind of struggles and it kind of flails around, then you just back down and then hence the flip-flopping, right? So I think this is the key issue. There are two key issues, as I said, the political changes where new political leaders always want to create their own legacy, create their own program. So there's no real continuity. And we're not putting students at the center. This is the sad thing. At the end of the day, siapa yang jadi bangsa, it's the students, because they are victims of this flip-flopping and this uncertainty. And it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you've thought about that. Have you thought about how we can reduce some of this, you know, uncertainty and this flip-flopping, create more institutional integrity or resilience to any of the political changes? What do you think needs to happen?
That is exactly what needs to happen. The education system needs to, protect, shield itself in a way from political changes at the top. But this is what we don't seem to be able to do. If you look at ideally it should be the leadership within the ministry that is driving, irrespective of who is on top, right? But look at our DG, our MOE DG. They're never there long enough to be able to bring and drive the changes and the strategic changes that are required. So for example, our last director general was there for 18 months. She is an amazing lady, that's Dr. Habiba. But she had 18 months. The current DG is leaving next month. So if you had really, not just strong leadership, but give them enough of a runway to really make the changes and insulate from political changes, that would be a huge first step. But that's a key, that's a systemic issue. And that is reflected in the schools as well. There's a very high rate of turnover with the SLTs, with the senior leadership team, with the principals. They're never ever given enough time to really make the changes and drive the change, you know, and very often promotion is predicated on, okay, who's the most senior person, not necessarily looking at who would be the best person, right? So it goes to the most senior person, and often for, you know, reasons like, okay, then when they retire, they'll retire at that pay grade, for example, right? So that is a very common phenomenon.
I understand that education is a long-term investment. Sometimes, you know, you invest now to see changes in the future. Very few quick wins in the education system. But what kind of length are you talking about? When you say they're not there long enough to make a difference, how long does somebody need to be in a position of a decision-making position to be able to affect change?
Well, at least 3 to 5 years, Melissa, right? I mean, ideally 5 years. So if you could put in, a very strong 50-year-old, for example, or a 55-year-old who has at least, you know, 10 years, obviously ideal, but, you know, I know that's not always practical. But you can't be having 1.5 years, 1 year, 2 years. It's just not enough to be able to see through what you need to do.
Okay. Nina, in the few minutes we have left, I'm going to come back to the issue of trust schools, because I think I'm really curious to know, and you say that trust schools are tried and tested, this model works. Can we talk a little bit about how that model has been proven to work in terms of measuring its impact, and what, say, the public can do to support this? If it's, you know, if we want to achieve 500 trust schools by, you know, 2025, what can the public do? Can the public do anything to support this?
Absolutely, because the whole trust school program is premised on engagement with all stakeholders. Yeah, of course, we have students at the center. Of course, we work with teachers to improve teaching and learning in the classroom. Of course, we work with the school leaders to make sure that there is the strong leadership in place. But we also work with the parents and the community to make sure that they are partners on board with school improvement. Yeah, it's not something that can happen in isolation. So in an ideal world, all of these stakeholders will work together. Our latest version of the Trust School program also includes a fifth dimension, which is the system. Back to, you know, what we were talking about, the MOE, not just at the federal level, but also the JPN, the State Education Department, and the district education offices as well. So really, it has to be, you know, the proverbial kind of takes a village, right?
It takes
everyone, right? And that is the way that you get success. You have to bring everyone on board. And of course, parents are key in that. And, you know, we're very, very happy to see that in all the trust schools, the engagement, it's not just with the PIBG. This is it. Most schools will have a PIBG. Most schools will invite parents in, but only for like report card day or, you know, for the sports day. No, it has to go beyond that kind of episodic kind of engagement. Most schools want to try and keep parents out of school, okay, because they see them as, you know, interfering or intervening. But no, in a trust school, we see parents and the community as partners in education.
Oh, it does take a village, definitely. Nina, thank you so much for speaking with me tonight. It's been a pleasure. That was my conversation with Nina Adlan-Disney, the Executive Director of Leap Ed Services. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.